Hello. I know that we have a few people who are still waiting in line to get their headphones, but I want to thank you for allowing us to have a start a minute late so that everybody could get in and get their headphones for translation. If you're using headphones, one is for English and two is for German. And so people may enter and exit, and we absolutely understand that process. Hello. Thank you so much. All right. I'm very excited to be here and be part of and moderate the panel for Central and Eastern Europe. We have four fantastic presentations today. As we go through them, I'll introduce each of our speakers. Our first two presentations will be in English. So as you're getting comfortable and in your chairs, three presentations will be in English. So as you're getting comfortable and in your chairs, that will be ready to go. Our first, we'll do the kind of standard panels. The speakers will come up and present, and we'll save our questions for the end. Our first presenter for today is Tomek, who will be talking about the queer 1970s and early 1980s in Poland as a proto-political era, evidence from the emerging archives. Tomek has published and taught courses in queer studies since the late 90s. He's a founding co-editor of Inter Alia, some of you may know, the queer studies journal, and he's the author of Exposures, American Gay Men's Life Writing Since Stonewall, and of course, co-editor of a variety of other volumes. He's also working on a project with one of our other panelists, who will talk a little bit more when that panelist gets up also. So with that, we'll give Tomek a round of applause.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this introduction. Very pleased to be here, and it's an honor to be speaking to everyone today. The project that I'm working on and that I'll present on is called Cruising the 1970s. There are other people at this conference who are also part of this project, and you may have heard a paper or two already, which addresses some of the things that emerged from this research project. So it's called Cruising the 70s, Unearthing Pre-HIV/AIDS Queer Sexual Cultures. And it's taking place in the UK, Germany, Spain, and Poland. And in Poland specifically, we are focusing on building a kind of body of texts, including oral history interviews, with which we and other people then can also work. So we've been collecting oral history interviews, but also doing archival research, and it's a group of people, so not everyone does everything. But people have looked at the general press, at professional journals, for example, journals that were addressed to the state police under state socialism, sexology journals, also Samizdat publications, which I'll get to, so early queer zines, letters sent to editors, literary works, translations of literary works, artworks, criticism. There's a whole grouping of sort of subject areas here. And Karol Radziszewski, who will speak at this very session, is also part of the project. He's a visual artist, as you know. I'll just share some remarks about some of the things that we are finding from this research. So one of the things that we find is that by focusing on the 1970s, we are learning from oral history interviews, among other ways, that there was really a kind of tacit acceptance of homosexuality in the experience of many of our interviewees, but it was tacit at best. There was no official acknowledgement of homosexuality, and this veil of silence was sort of gradually lifting in the course of the 70s. This tacit acceptance is still the norm, we're also learning, in many Polish families today. So people may be able to introduce their partners, but not really announce that they are in a relationship with that person, for instance. In the 70s, it was patently clear from the interviews, women and men who were queer were also likely to marry and raise children, and some of them stayed married for maybe 20 years. And it's really quite frequently the case that then they would divorce and kind of move on and have lesbian and gay lives. There was more of a kind of discursive presence of homosexuality outside the familial sphere, outside the family of origin. And so there were, for example, newspaper articles that included some reporting on what was going on across the Iron Curtain. There were some first-person manifestos that were published. There were sex advice columns which addressed homosexuality. So there was some talk about it, but there wasn't a whole lot of it. let me just speculate very briefly on why this silence. Judy Takacs said yesterday that homosexuality was not criminalized in Poland, and this goes back to the first criminal code in 1932. And now, while this is a positive thing, of course, in one way, in another, it's also, I think, something that suggested that there should be silence around homosexuality because there's no mention of homosexuality in the law, and B, whereas in many places in other countries, people were building movements that coalesced against the demand that homosexuality should be decriminalized. This wasn't an option in Poland because there was no criminalization. And so I think there is this kind of double-edged effect to this. A number of informal pre-war institutions persisted. I mean, places where people met other people, cruising spots, et cetera, and of course there is also a kind of veil of silence around that. There is really no civil society to speak of, very few civil society organizations, many of them illegal in the 1970s in Poland. The party, the political elite, was completely uninterested in LGBT issues. They often had the same views on sexual morality as the more conservative part of the society, including, of course, the Roman Catholic Church, which is very prominent in Poland. And finally, I would say that there is a kind of resistance in Poland generally to hyphenated identities, and it really has to do, partly at least, with the history of the partitions of Poland and the kind of ethnic or ethnocentric nationalism that I think has resulted from that experience, and also the experience of the Holocaust and World War II, where to say that you were Jewish Polish was dangerous and you wanted to hide that identity, and then after the war that same kind of logic of silence also persisted for reasons that I don't have the time to get into. But I just want to say that in general in Poland you don't necessarily go about saying I'm a Russian part German Pole, right? Or a Jewish Pole or a Muslim Pole. And the same goes for sexuality. People talking about how they met their partners, either long-term partners or sort of one-off partners. It's very striking that people who are talking about early sexual encounters that happened in the 50s or 60s, so people who are in their 80s sometimes, they are saying, and this is true for men, we didn't speak to women of that age group, but this is true for men, that these were coincidental sort of encounters, that they may have been seduced by someone in the family, a teacher, or just someone they met in the street. But usually there were no words exchanged, at least not about what was going on. And then this seems to change in the 70s, where it somehow becomes possible for younger people in the 70s to hear about cruising spots, for example, from their schoolmates and so on. For women, this pattern of eligibility persists until the 1990s, when there are bars and places where they can, sort of go and meet other women. So, for example, this woman who was aged 70, more or less, said this in her interview. Men's homosexuality, when it was marked and when it led to ostracism, was visible. Even as a child, I heard people calling someone a faggot or pedo. But I have no such memories pertaining to women or girls, or it was seldom. She kind of hesitates, but she doesn't really recall anything. I had loving feelings for a female friend, and then I told her, but the thought had never crossed her mind. We think these things are legible, public, obvious, but they may not be so to others, she says. And then in another interview, which was actually conducted not as part of the project, but as part of another project by an LGBT NGO in Poland, a woman, this is not an anonymous interview, so her name is Elżbieta Parczewska, and she was born in 51. She describes, in a way that is almost comical, how she had been fired from her job. She was an educated woman with a good job at a public institution. She has been fired. She was fired from this institution for stalking her female coworker, with whom she apparently fell in love. But she was in complete denial about this, and she was the daughter of a professor. She knew a sexology expert personally and shared this story with him. He told her, "You are a lesbian," and she just laughed it off. And then it's only retrospectively that she thinks about this. She moved out of Poland for other reasons. In 1980, she was married to a man, then married again. And finally, she ends up with a woman and in a lesbian relationship. And she realizes, partly by moving out of Poland and moving into another kind of discursive context, that she kind of reconstructs that experience in her autobiography, her spoken autobiography. Now, we're talking in this project about what we are calling the long 1970s. And let me explain very briefly the kind of time frame here. So first of all, there is, of course, some continuities with the past. And I mentioned already the, you know, the cruising spots, for instance. But there's also police surveillance, at least from the 1950s, probably earlier, but we have evidence that's clear from the 50s on, that is due to criminal activity of which homosexual men specifically were victims, beatings, muggings, and also occasionally murders. The police apparently hoped to create a kind of complete list of names in every Polish city of people who were known to be homosexual. Then in the mid-80s, this shifted because there was something called Operation Hyacinth, which was, again, surveillance, but it was coordinated, was synchronized. So it had a very intimidating effect on people, or seemed to, was supposed to have. And it kind of came also in the wake of the imposition of martial law in December 1981, when there was a similarly kind of synchronized, you know, arrest, mass arrest of political activists. The police has done something like that again, to a lesser extent maybe, but they brought in hundreds of men for questioning in cities across Poland, and they were asked, you know, are you a homosexual? And usually these were people who were on those lists, and they were known already to be homosexual. And can you name others who are? And they were hoping to expand this, but because they did it in such a provocative way, because people saw each other, you know, in the hallways of those police stations, and they heard stories from their friends and so on, this was a very kind of prominent moment. And it paradoxically led to a kind of defiance, to a reaction of defiance, and this is really the beginning of LGBT organizing in Poland, kind of in the wake of that Operation Hyacinth, which was done in November 85, but then repeated also the following year. Let me also share some quotations with you. So this is, again, this is not from our research, actually, but John Stanley, who is a US-Canadian historian, spent his Fulbright year in Poland in the mid-70s, and he was a gay man, and he's reminiscing about what it was like, and he says this. Warsaw in the 70s had a gay social life, but there was no organized political structure, and as a result, there were small groups that really lived in different domains. They had contact through organized parties, but also through bars. And so I think what he's saying is there is a kind of social gay life, but there is really not a kind of political, you know, organizing going on. And then in 1973, a very prominent sexology expert who had a sex advice column in a popular weekly, Zbigniew Lewstarowicz, reports on letters from readers to the editor that he had received. He received quite a number, I mean several thousand of those letters. And he says 4% of letters concerned so-called sexual deviations, mainly homosexuality. Most demand that homosexuality should be rehabilitated as legitimate sexual behavior. And this is interesting because even though he talks about, you know, he talks about a sexology expert, he uses language that suggests a kind of political demand being made. And this is people writing in the late 60s and early 70s. So there is a kind of sense of discrepancy between those views, I think. And partly what I'm trying to talk about is how to explain this discrepancy. I'm saying, I guess, that there is a kind of connection between sociability, which is what Stanley is talking about, and what I'm calling proto-political sociality. So, for example, this man here says, you know, we couldn't have done anything because of the political regime and so on and so forth. We couldn't get up on a barricade and wave our gay flag. But what we did have was this growing circle of people where one person met another person met another person, and this led to non-anonymous contacts. And then I have other quotes which kind of suggest about how this may have been happening. I think I may have to skip some of them for the sake of time. But this is, for example, Wolfgang Kielik, an East German who was living in Poland, who talks about traveling in Poland and talks about the ease with which he was meeting people. And he also says, we were meeting people, again, not anonymously, but usually through friends. We were going to parties that were hosted at people's homes. And this was more interesting, you know, as a way to meet people, to meet lovers also. And I asked him, were there women there? Were there lesbian women there? And she says, there were women, but not lesbians. And some of those parties were hosted by women, not necessarily just gay men. One of the things that I've looked at in the course of this research project was a collection of letters which is held in Vienna at an LGBT organization in Vienna called Hozivin. And there was a Polish-Austrian activist there who left Poland in the 70s. And then in 83, he set up this kind of newsletter that was illegally distributed in Poland. And again, this distribution network consisted of his personal friends, first of all, and then friends of those friends. The letters that he received were both about the distribution and the process and so on, and about, you know, personal problems that those people were having and that they wanted to share with him. And finally, those letters and the bulletin or the newsletter itself became a kind of arena in which there was a debate taking place about the words that people should be using to describe themselves as homosexual and so on and so forth. So this is just some illustration. It's a letter from a high school age friend of his who is one of the distributors, and he reports on who got the letters. It's a kind of clandestine way of coding where you don't actually use names. But he also shares personal information in the same letter. Talks about his holidays and, you know, whom he went out with and so on. This is a letter from Waldemar Zboralski, who is quite an important activist in the late 80s, and is written in German because he doesn't yet know that the guy behind this is a Polish speaker. And he talks about the word pedał, which I mentioned, which is the Polish word for faggot, and he talks about how irritating it is that people use this word. So he's, you know, he writes his first letter to this organization, and his subject matter is representation, the use of language. This is another activist who, in this particular letter, suggests the way in which the English word gay could be turned into a Polish word and how it would work grammatically, you know, how you would declinate it and so on. So this is a kind of interesting illustration, I think, of the kind of exchanges that were taking place. This is around 86, that those letters are written, 85, 86. Another example that I think Karol may be talking about is a publication coming out of Poland from Ryszard Kisiel, again, a group of friends working on a kind of queer zine. And in this case, what you also have is a woman who is contributing, a high school age woman whose name is Paulina Pilch. Okay, so I'm almost done. In the late 80s, so following this Operation Hyacinth, you have Zboralski, whom I mentioned, and other people trying to register for the very first time a Polish LGBT NGO with the courts, and they actually failed. This is still under communism. And we had two people who were kind of present when this organization was being founded. And one of them was 80 years old. He says, Zboralski invited people to Warsaw, but the main issue in the first meeting was who should spend the night at whose place. And he's just kind of laughing about it. But then we have someone else who is slightly younger. And he says, there were women present in that, you know, in those meetings. I remember someone named Renata. I remember that she came with another woman and so on. So one of the things that I think is happening in the second half of the 1980s as a result of this kind of more articulate and more kind of direct politicization of the movement is that it's not just parties for men, it's not just men socializing, but it's also that they include women and women begin to join the newsletters and also the meetings. So this is it. Thank you very much.
I was really impressed at the way he made up for time by speaking quickly. It was so impressive. And so I really want to thank Tomek for that. Especially, there are some things I'm looking forward to asking about in the question section, but the idea of people cruising police hallways became really exciting halfway through that presentation. But next up, we have Carol. Carol is going to be talking about the Queer Archives Institute as an art practice. He's a visual artist, a filmmaker, curator, publisher, editor-in-chief of Dick Fanzine. His practices hybridize personal stories and social unrest, underlining alternative stories alongside existing narratives. His disciplinary research, as well as his archive-based methodology, cross multiple historical, religious, social, and gender references. His artwork has been displayed all over, because he's fancy. He's also participated in several international biennials. With that, please give Carol a round of applause.
Hello, everybody. Can I just ask to turn off the lights? Because I'm a visual artist and I'm going to present a lot of photographs. Yeah. Yeah, I just think it will be a bit more visible. Yeah, because there are a lot of images. Just a second. Okay, so before I get to the Kurakov Institute, actually, I will just run quite chronologically with my interest in archive in general. This is image is from my exhibition called Facts, Faggots, that I created in Warsaw in 2005. And it's considered the first openly queer or rather homosexual exhibition in the history of my country, which is Poland. I'm showing you to present how short this history is. And then the same year, 2005, I also started to publishing the zine called Dick Fagazine. It's an ongoing project. Later you can see some volumes of the magazine that I have here. The magazine at the beginning was concentrated only on the masculinity, homosexuality, mostly Poland and contemporary times. I was trying to see how the community looked like and so on. There were basically interviews and photographs. Then slowly I started to travel to several countries of the region, which is Central Eastern Europe. And that's how in 2009 I started to work on the special issue called Before 89. Here you see the cover. And that was like a turning point to all my kind of interest, also artistic interest. I started to travel gathering materials from different countries and contributions, meeting people from Serbia, Romania, Ukraine, Czech Republic, different places. Here you just see some pages from the magazine. And basically the idea was to cover somehow the queer life in the communist time before the communists fall down in region. And slowly I gathered some material that I started to present in the form of installations, and that's how slowly the archive started to grow. But the most important meeting I have when I was working on that magazine was in 2009 with Ryszard Kisiel. Here is Ryszard Kisiel, and we met 10 years ago and working still together. The project I dedicated to him is called Kisielland, and basically what Tomek mentioned already, this hyacinth action that was that happened in Poland in 1985, so police action against homosexuals to basically blackmail them, resulted in a special reaction. Most of the people were, gays were stopped having sex, or they were afraid, they were kind of aware what is happening. While Ryszard Kisiel said, okay, when the policeman make coming out for me, I don't have to afraid of anything, so he just started do everything he wanted. So this is the mock-up of the Filozine that he started in 86. This is editorial team that I consider like a kind of proto-queer community. They were friends, but they were also working together on this zine, distributing and working on the content. This is Waldek. Maybe some of you were on the my projections yesterday, so the film was also based on the Ryszard Kisiel's archive, and Waldek was present in the film as one of the guys. So Kisiel basically worked on the printing house, was a photo amateur in Gdańsk, in a harbor, north part of Poland, which is also important because the gay sailors, friends, were bringing some magazines from France, Canada, Germany, so they could have some access to the information. This is Ryszard Kisiel in his flat with the archive. And this is something amazing that you could see on my exhibition, Queer Archive Institute in Szpules Museum, the original stuff, but I'm showing you the, as he worked in the printing house, he had this idea to make a 500 empty pages notebook with the names of the countries and particular cities of Central Eastern Europe. And he started to travel to make a notes, where to go, where is sauna, how much is the tower, like all cruising spots and information from all over the region. And he was also taking photographs of the clubs, of the cruising spot places. Those photographs also you could see at the Szpules Museum now. This Operation Hyacinth that Tomek mentioned. And also in 85, 86, he started with the group of friends in the flat, private flat of one of them. The experimental sessions, like a very campy and queer photo shooting together. They have fun. He was directing. One friend was taking photographs. So Kisiel is on the right side on the picture. On the left side, it's the Waldek. He was a regular worker. And they were a couple. And with some other friends who are not mentioned with the name, they create this series of slides. There are more than 300 of them. And because, as I said, this queer history in Poland is really short, so I consider them like really the earliest kind of queer visual heritage. So since I learned about this archive and about Ryszard Kisiel and about these particular photos that for 30 years he was keeping in the plastic bag under his bed, just once said, oh, Karol, maybe you will be interested in that, and said, yeah, I'm kind of interested. And that's, they are also reflecting on the on the beginning of the AIDS crisis, but I'm not going to go with the details. But I created a film called Kisielland based on these photographs and kind of reenactment of the actions from the 80s with Ryszard Kisiel. And I want to show you a few examples of how I work. This is like in my artistic practice. So this is Robert Indiana Love from 1970, then General Idea 8 from 88. And in the archive of, actually the mock-up of Ryszard Kisiel Filozin, I found this collage, like cheap version of pop art from the communist times, like Alphabet with Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. And I thought that there is this kind of intention similar to General Idea, although he was not an artist, Ryszard, but me as an artist, I always use this strategy, taking something originally from the archive, Eastern Europe usually, and then creating in a dialogue with the global kind of queer canon. And that's how I come up with this idea of series of paintings, graphics, and basically also wallpaper. I created as an artwork. In one of the shows, I was even able to present the original part of the General Idea wallpaper, because as you see in the, later in the presentation, I'm very interested in juxtapositions and this transnational connections of the queer culture. So there were several exhibitions presenting this. Usually I also present Ryszard Kisiel's photographs, the film, the archival materials. This is how usually the installations looks like. Performances, I'm not going to go with the details with all the works because we don't have time, but if any of you will be more interested in particular strategies, I will be happy to tell. And then in 2015, as a result, all of that, what I was showing you, the basically the Ryszard Kisiel's archive, my travels, oral history, recordings, video recordings of interviews, materials that I gathered when I was traveling, I create Queer Archives Institute. And I thought it should concentrate on Poland and maybe Central Eastern Europe. But then I usually said, I thought if I would be American, I would say, okay, just global, just Queer Archives Institute. But the idea is that it's covering rather not North America, not West Europe, but to point out that I'm interested in these more transnational connections, I opened the Institute first exhibition in São Paulo in Brazil. I was there in 2015 and 2016 for a few months for the research. So basically, this is how usually the strategy looks. There is a huge logo. I'm occupying the other artistic institution to put my own inside. I'm based on the, when I'm building the show, I based on the materials from the local collection. Here it was Video Brazil in São Paulo, also presenting oral histories on the screen. And the tables were organize a bit like an analog Google, like a keyword, so you could search some particular words like AIDS, cruising, lesbian culture, the first publications. Here, for example, there is a table when I'm presenting the first pages of the first issues of different magazines from both Central Eastern Europe and Brazil, a bit from the other South American countries, but rather Brazil was the focus, like a kind of a map of the geography of the different countries. And after working in Brazil and presenting also Eastern European materials there, I went to Belarus, to Minsk, and this is another strategy. I invite, because it's also important to remember that the context of countries like Ukraine or Belarus is very specific, because the criminalization of the homosexuality was just like in 1994, 1995, depending on the country, and which means that everything that was done before, it was considered as a proof of crime, any culture, queer material. So many of my works are dealing with how to bring this physical presence of the archive of the memory. And I invite also young artists, Belarusian artists, to contribute for the exhibition with the new installations. But always there is the line of the archival collection that I'm bringing with me and also gathering when I'm in a particular country. Then we also organize the workshops, the screenings, and the artist is present, answering questions, meeting people. And another artwork that I wanted to show you to present the exact methodology how I work, it's called Invisible Belarusian Queer History. And it's a kind of appropriation of the conceptual project of the Belarusian photography artist. He made a series of photographs called Just Invisible. So they were undeveloped or overdeveloped analog photographs that appears black and white, and with some small quotations that were referring to more conceptual aspect of invisibility. But I appropriate this kind of strategy, and based on the real stories from the interviews I collect about any traces in Belarusian queer history, I create the series of black photographs with the handwritten descriptions made by my Belarusian friends. So here is example: the photo taken with too small exposure when the policeman was trying to document a painter having sex with the other guy at the square on the corner of the Lenin's Avenue and Lenin Street, Minsk, late 70s. The story is real, the guy is still alive, but although it was not possible to make the interview directly with him. But I create the whole series of these black photographs, and it was interesting enough that the people who even helped me to collect the stories, when they saw the photographs, they were asking me, where did you get that? How it's possible that you have this archival material? And I said, no, we just created together, because this is how I use like painting, photography, to work with the imagination and then creating some discussion. And to get back to these transnational exchanges, the Belarusian research was transported to Kyiv, to Ukraine, presented in the form of the city lights, but also exhibition, because I think it's also important to exchanging the materials and presenting in different countries also in the region. The other example of strategy the Queer Archive Institute is doing is a performance. So in Zagreb, Contemporary Museum, I was invited to work with the collection, actually to queer the collection. There was not much queer or almost nothing in the collection. The museum is huge, new, so this also very specific type of this post-communist countries building the new huge institutions that are lacking many important materials. But anyway, I accept the invitation. For 1 month I was living in a room just next to the archive of the museum, and I found the idea to, in the operating hours of the museum, to set up pop-up kind of office of Queer Archive Institute. So I found one space that were next to the collection, and everybody treated as a storage or pretend that it not exists, although everybody could easily access it just there. And I put the logo again, I put the office, and with a group of friends we are working on the issue, summarizing the research. But the idea was also to meeting the accidental visitors in the museum and telling them about the collection and literally queering the institution itself. And this is maybe for the later discussion, but this kind of pop-up institution that is intervening in some particular places, institutions, museums, is something that I'm really into. And usually all my trips, researches, and stuff are summarizing in the form of the publication, which means Dick Fagazine volumes. And this one was for the conference in Paris 2017, so it's English and French, and it's kind of the best of from all the materials from other countries. The latest one was dedicated to Belarus. And at the end, I just want to show also the project that I did in Colombia. I was never in Colombia, but my friend, close friend, artist and curator Juan Betancourt, he for a few months organized the whole research and action to gather the Colombian materials to adopt this transnational Queer Archive Institute idea. So you, again, some materials from Eastern Europe appear in Bogota in this show, but also local artists, performers were interfering with the exposition, and we are planning to make Dick Fagazine about Colombia. Yeah, this one, I don't know if we still have time or... Okay, so the last project, it's part of the festival called Pomada. It's a queer festival that I'm running with other queer activists, artists in Warsaw for 10 years now. And in 2 years, we organized an exhibition called The Heritage. It was a very political one, kind of referring directly to our current government historical politics. Because as I said in the abstract, for me it's also important to this kind of work, bringing back the history and visibility of queer past in a very local kind of context. It's a part of political agenda, what will be in the future in the books, in the universities, in the collections of the museums. So That's what I concentrate now, besides signing the letters, marching, being active as an activist, also with this kind of culture and artistic agenda, bringing this heritage and showing to the public. It's part of this general idea to subverse the history and Polish memory, and I'm using this as a, I would say, political tool. So here is the website that it's super not up to date now. It's really not much there, but in the future I hope it will be more presenting the research and digitalized stuff that I'm collecting, presenting. But you could check it anyway. It's also the institute is quite present on Instagram. That's the best thing to follow, Kurakov Institute on Instagram, because wherever I'm traveling somewhere, I'm posting current research, so not really waiting for something, but saying, okay, now I'm Serbia, we are doing this, so on. So I think this is it. Thank you very much for the attention.
Wonderful. I really appreciate the way that Carol works so internationally and collaboratively, and I hope that that's something that we can come back to in the question section around how we can do that together. Next up, we have Valentina Janku. Their paper is titled Just a Dream, the Museum of Queer Culture in Bucharest and the Challenge of Queering Memory in Romania. Valentina is a feminist writer, activist, and independent researcher with a background in art history, and in the past 10 years has been working at the National Museum of Art in Romania. She's worked on curatorial projects, both on modern and contemporary art, with a political touch for those left outside the official history of art. She researches queer Eastern European art and feminist practices and art challenged to outsider art. With that, please give Valentina a round of applause. Fantastic. I really appreciate particularly the attention to talking about the intersections with race in this particular presentation. Again, that was a fantastic moment, and I look forward to coming back to that. Our last presentation of the day, and this is the one that you get to use your little headphones for, if you enjoy them, is Elena Gustiania and Elena Zertlik. This is the Moscow Archive of LGBTQ People. These are the founders and custodians of that archive. Please give them a round of applause.
Is it good, yeah? Is it zu hören?
Yeah,
it's working. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Moment.
Unser Vertrag ist in der Tat der kürzeste, aber weil es mit einer Übersetzung läuft, wird es leider zum längsten. Aber wir versuchen, diese Zeit nicht zu missbrauchen. Aber mir wäre es bequemer, dass ich die Bilder sehe. Na gut. Entschuldigung, helfen Sie mir bitte, ich brauche, dass ich das, ich werde nicht verstanden, ja. Machen Sie es, wie es früher war. Ja, so. Nein, nicht so. So, ja, danke sehr. Denn sonst ist es mir schwer zu steuern. Schön. Wir beginnen unsere, ja. So, das ist eine unserer Archivalien.
And some pretty horrific attacks and murders. In June, an anti-gay propaganda.
Принятием нового закона начались репрессии.
Конечно, люди смотрели очень-очень косо. Это были дикие взгляды, очень такие.
You really can get killed in broad daylight in this town.
Мы не готовы жить в шкафу, мы не готовы лгать. Либо вы нас принимаете такими, какими есть, либо вообще никак.
Propaganda law has prompted an increase in homophobic violence. For example, the 23-year-old in Volgograd our driver talked about, who was tortured to death with beer bottles. There has also been a rise in vigilante groups, like the neo-Nazi Occupy Pedophilia, that hunt down homosexuals online and make YouTube clips of how they abuse them, sometimes to death. These crimes are rarely investigated, and the authorities have referred to them as civil movements fighting the sins of society.
So, das wäre es. Wir haben Ihnen diese Archivalie gezeigt, damit Sie sich vorstellen, damit Sie sich ein Bild machen können, unter welchen Verhältnissen das heute vorzustellende Projekt existiert und arbeiten muss. Und jetzt kommt zum Wort Frau Gusitinska und ich begleite das mit PowerPoint und übersetze das ins Deutsche. Leider haben wir nicht gewusst, dass es nur Englisch gesprochen wird. Also bitte starten.
Союзе само упоминание о геях и лесбиянках было невозможно.
Viele Jahre lang zu Sowjetzeiten war nicht einmal eine Erwähnung über Homosexuelle möglich.
Воспоминания, дневники, письма могли стать уликами для следственных органов или поводом для применения принудительного психиатрического лечения.
Memorien, Erinnerungen, Tagebücher oder Briefe könnten als Indiz bzw. als Beweismaterial durch Strafverfolgungsbehörden oder als Anlass für die Zwangspsychiatrie missbraucht werden.
Судьба гомосексуалистов в Советском Союзе была большей частью трагична, и об этом почти ничего не было известно.
Das Schicksal der Homosexuellen in der Sowjetunion war weitgehend tragisch und total verschwiegen.
Собрать свидетельства этих судеб в виде документов было единственным способом спасти от забвения нашу историю.
In der Sammlung der möglichen Dokumente darüber habe ich die einzige Möglichkeit gesehen, unsere Geschichte nicht in Vergessenheit geraten zu lassen.
В начале 90-х годов, когда с ослаблением цензуры стали появляться первые публикации на тему гомосексуальности, я начала собирать эти материалы.
Anfang der 90er Jahre vorigen Jahrhunderts wurde die staatliche Zensur geschwächt und erschienen die ersten Publizierungen zum Thema Homosexualität. Da fing ich mit dem Sammeln jeweiligen Stoffs an.
Стали появляться первые издания гей-лесби-прессы.
Ganz kurz nachher tauchten auch die ersten Ausgaben der Lesben- und Schwulenpresse auf. Da sind die auf der Folie.
Узнав о существовании в Амстердаме архива Homodoc, у меня возникла идея создать у нас нечто в этом же роде.
Nachdem ich über das Archiv Homodoc in Amsterdam erfahren hatte, bekam ich die Idee, etwas Ähnliches bei uns in Russland zu gründen.
Archiv начал свою работу в ноябре 1996 года в помещении и при поддержке Московского общественного центра лесбиянок и геев «Треугольник» и проработал там около года, пока центр не прекратил свое существование.
Unser Archiv wurde im November 1996 eröffnet und im Büroraum des Moskauer G-Zentrums Treugolnik, das heißt Dreieck, untergebracht. Da wurde den Besucherinnen und Besuchern ein Lesesaal und eine Bibliothek angeboten. Und es funktionierte so knapp ein Jahr lang, bis Treugolnik aufhören musste.
Когда же закончился грант, на который снималось помещение, архив вынужден был приостановить свою деятельность.
Als die Finanzierung des Treugolniks abgeschlossen wurde, musste das Archiv ausziehen und hatte keinen Raum mehr.
Материалы собирались, но ни библиотека, ни читальный зал не работали.
Документы wurden weitergesammelt, aber die Bibliothek und der Lesesaal mussten stillgelegt werden.
Так продолжалось год. У нас не было средств снять хоть какое-либо помещение.
So dauerte es ein Jahr lang. Wir hatten kein Geld, um einen Raum mieten zu können.
И вот неожиданно пришла помощь от совершенно незнакомого нам человека, Клэр Жофрес, француженки, работавшей в то время в Москве.
Plötzlich kam die Hilfe von einer Person, die wir bisher gar nicht gekannt hatten. Es war Frau Claire Jouffres, die damals in Moskau arbeitete.
Она оказалась человеком очень деятельным и педантичным, и в течение двух лет с помощью еще нескольких друзей материально поддерживала архив.
Frau Jouffres erwies sich als sehr aktiv und konsequent und unterstützte das Archiv zwei Jahre lang mit Hilfe einiger Freunde von ihr.
Постепенно архив и библиотека расширялись, приходили новые читатели, которые не только пользовались библиотекой, но и много делали для ее пополнения и для сбора новых материалов.
Allmählich wurden das Archiv und die Bibliothek größer. Daher kamen neue Leserinnen und Leser, die nicht nur als Nutzerinnen und Nutzer, sondern als auch Sammlerinnen und Sammler und Mitwirkende da waren und ihre Beiträge zum Ausbau der Bibliothek leisteten.
Образовалось правление архива, группа активистов, которые помогали систематизировать материалы, обслуживать читателей библиотеки. За более чем 20-летнюю историю существования архива собрано огромное количество материалов.
So hat sich am Archiv ein Vorstand gebildet. Es war eine Gruppe von Ehrenamtlichen, die bei der Bearbeitung, Eintragung und Systematisierung der Archivalien sowie bei der Leserinnen- und Leserbedienung mithalfen. Im Laufe der mehr als 20 Jahre wurde eine kolossale Anzahl von Dokumenten gesammelt und bearbeitet. So ist das ein Bild dafür.
Собрание архива состоит из следующих разделов.
Der Archivbestand umfasst folgende Abteilungen.
Коллекция Лесби-Гей-Пресса, возникшей в начале 90-х годов.
Die Sammlung von der Lesben- und Schwulenpresse, die am Anfang der 90er Jahre aufgetaucht ist.
Это газеты и журналы, появление которых стало возможно с ослаблением цензуры в период перестройки.
Das sind die Zeitungen und Zeitschriften, deren Erscheinung erst nach der Zensurschwächung zu Wendezeiten Perestroika möglich wurde.
Эти малотиражные издания возникали и исчезали.
Diese Ausgaben in Kleinauflagen tauchten auf und verschwanden bzw. hörten auf.
В настоящее время ни в одной российской библиотеке невозможно найти эти издания.
Die sind zurzeit in keiner Bibliothek Russlands zu finden. Da sehen die auf der Folie.
Библиотека художественной, научной и научно-популярной литературы.
Abteilung 2, Bibliothek der schönen und populärwissenschaftlichen Literatur.
Это более полутора тысячи томов на русском, английском, немецком, французском и других языках.
Die Abteilung verfügt über anderthalbtausend Bände auf Russisch, Englisch, Deutsch, Französisch und in anderen Sprachen.
Вырезки из публикаций в общей прессе, отражающие различные аспекты жизни сексуальных меньшинств и отношения к ним общества.
Abteilung 3. Zeitungsausschnitte, wo verschiedene Lebensaspekte der sexuellen Minderheiten sowie die Einstellung der Gesellschaft zu denen geschildert werden.
Это более 2000 единиц хранения, начиная с первых публикаций конца 80-х годов прошлого века.
Das Angebot erreicht über 2000 Registraturen seit dem Ende der 80er Jahre vorigen Jahrhunderts.
Это рукописи, дневниковые записи, заметки, передаваемые архиву его посетителями.
Es sind auch Manuskripte, Tagebücher, Notizen, die von den Archivbesucherinnen und Besuchern erhalten worden sind.
Благодаря энтузиазму друзей архива была издана книга Воронцовой Юрьевой «Снег для Марины. Первый лесбийский роман на русском языке. Антология лесбийского рассказа. Сборник рассказов авторов-лесбиянок, выбранных на основе конкурса, проведенного архивом».
Das Engagement der Archivfreunde ermöglichte es, dass das Archiv einige Bücher erschienen lassen hat, nämlich den ersten lesbischen russischsprachigen Roman von Autorin Natalia Voronzova, da ist es ja auf der Folie. Der Roman heißt Schnee für Marina. Den Sammelband der lesbischen Novelle, der nach einer Ausschreibung durchs Archiv erstellt worden da ist.
Были подготовлены и изданы книги Сони Франетта «Розовые фламинго», «Десять сибирских интервью», повесть Ольги Краузе «Отпетая жизнь».
Es wurden zum Druck vorbereitet und verlegt die Bücher von Rosa die Bücher Rosa Flamingos, 10 Interviews aus Sibirien von amerikanischer Autorin Sonja Franette, hier ist sie, und das biografische Buch von der russischen Autorin Olga Krause, Das Leben unter Gesang.
В настоящее время готовится русский перевод книги Сони Франетта «Мой розовый путь в Россию».
Zurzeit wird die russische Fassung des biografischen Buches von Sonja Franette «Mein rosa Weg nach Russland» vorbereitet.
Научные исследования публикации, сделанные на базе архивных материалов.
Abteilung 5 umfasst die Forschungen und wissenschaftliche Beiträge, die anhand der Archivalien verfasst worden sind.
На протяжении всех лет существования архива им пользуются исследователи, журналисты, студенты из разных стран.
Solange das Archiv besteht, wird es von Forscherinnen und Forschern, Journalistinnen und Journalisten und Studentinnen und Studenten aus verschiedenen Ländern benutzt.
Мы охотно делимся материалами, предоставляем возможности копирования и сканирования.
Wir stellen gerne unsere Archivalien zur Verfügung, lassen die kopieren und scannen bzw. speichern.
Видеоматериалы, гей-прайды, демонстрации протеста, шествия, пикеты.
Abteilung 6 umfasst Videoarchivalien, Gehparaden, Protestkundgebungen, Demozüge und anderes. Eines davon haben Sie eben gesehen.
Материалы, посвященные истории движения и его современному состоянию.
Abteilung 7 enthält Dokumente über die Geschichte der LGBT-Bewegung und deren aktuellen Stand.
Оцифрованные материалы архива. На протяжении нескольких лет мы занимаемся сканированием фондов и созданием электронного архива.
Abteilung 8 umfasst digitalisierte Archivalien. Seit einigen Jahren scannen wir unseren Bestand und erstellen ein virtuelles Archiv.
Архив всегда имел значение не только как место, где собраны и хранятся документы нашей истории.
Unser Archiv ist uns nicht nur als eine Aufbewahrungsstelle unserer Geschichte wichtig.
Его существование очень важно для нашего самосознания.
Seine Existenz hat eine große Auswirkung auf unser Selbstbewusstsein.
В завершении я хочу подчеркнуть, что архив возник как частная инициатива.
Zum Schluss sei es hervorgehoben, dass das Archiv aus einer Privatinitiative gegründet wurde und dabei keine Erwerbsziele verfolgt werden.
Мы не преследуем никаких коммерческих целей.
Alle Informationen werden unentgeltlich zur Verfügung gestellt.
Вся информация предоставляется бесплатно.
Я уже перевела, продолжайте.
Да. Единственное, о чем мы просим, из соображений безопасности, не выкладывать материалы в интернете, и если ссылаться на помощь архива, то только в научных публикациях.
Das Einzige, worum wir bitten, die Angaben, deren Bekanntgabe uns in Gefahr bringen könnte, nicht im Internet unterzubringen und die Verweise auf die Archivbenutzung lediglich in wissenschaftlichen Beiträgen zuzulassen.
Und пока не пользователи архива ни журналисты нас не подводили.
Und bis jetzt hat niemand, weder Journalisten noch Benutzer, uns verraten.
Большое спасибо.
Schönen Dank. Eine heldenhafte Frau.
В заключение я хочу сказать, что мое выступление здесь и приезд был возможен благодаря Лене Церлих, которая проявила большое мужество, сопровождая меня из соображений, опять же, безопасности ее социального статуса в Москве.
Frau Gusetinskaya sagt mir danke Worte, weil ich mich eingewilligt habe, sie nachher zu begleiten, weil für mich es nicht ungefährlich ist. Und aber ich sage immer, ich bin lesbische Aktivistin seit 28 Jahren und das habe ich für sie und für unser Projekt gemacht. Das ist einmalig in Russland und ja, es ist sehr von Wert für uns. Danke Ihnen.
So I'd like to invite all of our panelists to stay. We have a few moments for questions. So as our panelists come up, I'm supposed to remind you of some important things. We're going to take a group photo because everybody needs to post something to Instagram. And so we're going to meet for that group photo at 6:15 at the large steps. Also, if you're someone who's not going to use your name card, or you don't, you can return it over at the information desk. We have a few moments for questions, and I know that we had a really wonderful panel. I really want to say I appreciate the vein of making visible things despite impact around legislation and how law and policy really informed all of the work that's happening here. But that said, folks who have questions for these wonderful panelists, you can make your way. We've got mics. Yeah, friend.
I'm Liang Kaiyo. I have a question for Carol. Again, I'm very impressed with all your artistic practice. I'm just wondering why is a transnational perspective is so important to your artistic practice. Can you explain a little bit?
Thank you very much for the question. Yes, basically at the beginning, as I said, I was more focused on Poland because it was so much things to do. But then I realized that I have much more common with in the region when I'm traveling than with some other Western countries that have this official history. So I thought it's interesting to combine the information together. And later on, it became even more important. And for me, as I was mentioned a bit, become a political agenda to say that we are not only focusing on this national kind of narration, which is running to this nationalistic approach, but rather trying to exchange and what we were discussing on the previous panel, kind of queer nation or kind of international queer community, that it's bigger than just our nationalities. And for me, it's very important. And also comparing the strategies with the several regimes, like we have the socialism, communist, and Brazil have the dictatorship, and how the first publications emerge under that kind of conditions to do the interviews and compare. It was very interesting for me to do.
Absolutely, thank you. We have another question from a friend in the back.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to ask the first presenter to maybe elaborate on this continuation of silence after 45 that you touched on. And I wanted to ask in general what the Soviet interest in repressing LGBTIQ life was, and whether that was somehow different from Western capitalistic interests, in your opinion?
So the point I was sort of hinting at or just alluding to briefly is that, of course, Poland was a very diverse, ethnically diverse country in the past, but not post World War II, and this has to do in a great to a great extent with the history of the Holocaust, of course, and there is. A colleague in Warsaw, a Polish studies scholar who has worked on representations of World War II, and she has made the argument that there is a kind of trope of homosociality in one of the sort of prominent novels that are addressed to young readers and are read at school. And there was a very kind of virulent reaction by some people, also in the academic community, when she has, you know, said this, her response, in part, was to say that in this kind of post World War II context in Poland, but also, of course, during the Holocaust, that someone was Jewish wasn't so much a matter of stating something that was just factually the case, but it was a denunciation, and that this mindset, for political reasons also, has continued, and that it also extends to homosexuality. That was kind of the argument that she made, and I guess I was troping on that argument in my allusion, if that explains what I was trying to do. I'm not a historian myself, but I wouldn't say that there was a kind of specific party inspired form of homophobia in Poland. I don't, you know, in the post World War II period. That does not seem to me to be the case. I mean, there was not a kind of institutional persecution. There was no criminalization. There was just ostracism that was very real and that affected a number of people's lives. But there wasn't really a kind of coordinate effort by the authorities to prosecute homosexuals until that Operation Hyacinth, which kind of remains enigmatic because it's not really clear. I mean, the surveillance part is I think partly justifiable because of the very real concerns that, you know, police had as police, but the coordinated effort that had this intimidating effect is not, and I don't know how to explain that.
Okay, so we have three questions. I'm going to start with my friend here in the black, and then we'll go there, and then up front. So we'll start here. Yes, please.
In which language should I ask for Moscow? French oder soll ich auf Deutsch jetzt
Deutsch, fragen? Wenn es... Russisch oder Deutsch, wenn es möglich ist.
Russisch, okay. Ja, sorry.
Russisch
ja, ich wollte erst mal sagen, dass ich total großen Respekt habe vor Ihrer Arbeit. Also das möchte ich echt betonen, das hat mich total beeindruckt gerade. Also ich habe alle Vorträge, fand ich super, aber ich möchte einfach noch mal sagen, also was ich was für einen großen Respekt und auch für eine Dankbarkeit empfinde, so auch als junge Lesbe einfach. Vorne weg.
Lassen Sie mich bitte übersetzen für Frau Gusitierske. Denn die Frage wird an Sie gestellt. Habe ich Sie
ja,
richtig
genau.
Verstanden? Ja, so. Ja, большое спасибо. Приглашаю посетить наш архив. Schönen Dank, kommen Sie uns ins Archiv zu besuchen.
Ja, sehr gerne. Das ist auch meine Frage, die ich habe.
Его посещают в основном молодые люди. Zu uns kommen weitgehend junge Frauen und Männer, ja, und queer Leute. Ja.
Okay. Genau, das ist auch meine Frage. Also wie ist es möglich, mit der Szene in Kontakt zu bleiben und diese Archivarbeit zu machen, ohne öffentlich zu werden? Also und was sind jetzt die, sozusagen, was passiert jetzt in der Zukunft? Also wie kann sich das Archiv gerade entwickeln in der aktuellen politischen Situation? Das ist passiv.
Информация об архиве мы все время распространяли самым, что ни на есть, кустарным способом. По-русски это называется «цыганская почта», по-французски «de bouche à l'oreille».
Мне достаточно написать по моему имейлу и позвонить по телефону. Я не задаю никаких вопросов, а просто говорю свой адрес и как проехать.
So, die Informationen werden auf die altümlichste Weise verbreitet. Also das heißt vom Mund zum Mund, ja, oder wir sagen noch Frau in Radio. So, aber es genügt nur mich anzurufen, mich zu Hause anzurufen und dann nenne ich meine Adresse und man kann schon zu mir, in meine Wohnung. Das ist dasselbe, was mein Archiv kommen. So ist
Что касается будущего, для будущего мы делаем следующее. Мы оцифровываем наши материалы. Ну, будущее архива, к сожалению, еще зависит от будущего нашей страны. Оно непредсказуемо. Впрочем, как и прошлое.
Also, was die Zukunft betrifft, wir geben uns Mühe, jetzt das Archiv zu digitalisieren, damit es mindestens aufzubewahren ist. Und leider hängt unsere Zukunft mit der Zukunft unseres Landes zusammen und die ist kaum zu vorhersagen, wie eigentlich auch die Vergangenheit.
Excellent. So, we only have about 2 more minutes left, but we have 2 questions.
Yeah. I have actually 2 questions for Elena, but I only speak English. So could somebody translate for me?
Aber wer könnte mir die Frage ins Deutsche übersetzen? Dann würden wir gerne die beantworten. Ja? Ja, danke. Danke dir.
So my first question is, it seems that the archive, according to the slides, collects post-Soviet information. So are there any libraries or archives in Russia that have the Soviet era information about LGBT people, if there's any? And my second... Yeah.
Also die Frage ist, es sieht so aus, als also von den Folien her sieht es so aus, als wäre das Material alles post-sowjetisch. Und die Frage ist, gibt es und wo finden wir das sowjetische Material?
Die Materialien der Sowjetzeiten.
Genau.
Aus den Sowjetzeiten.
Anyone objecting to translation?
Okay. Это очень интересный вопрос.
Das ist eine sehr interessante Frage.
Который задают практически все. И все ищут эти материалы. Ищем им мы их тоже.
Die kriege ich von allen, die ins Archiv kommen. Ja, alle suchen nach diesen Materialien und wir leider auch. Die haben wir noch nicht.
Как я сказала уже в начале своего выступления, что само упоминание геев и лесбиянок было невозможно, немыслимо в советской Советская Россия.
Am Anfang unseres Vortrages habe ich schon erwähnt, dass selbst die Erwähnung der Homosexualität war unmöglich. Ja, nicht einmal die Materialien oder so etwas. Natürlich gibt es solche, aber wo, bei wem und wie wir dazu kommen, das ist ja das Problem.
Тем не менее, иногда попадаются вещи редкие, вдруг какие-то дневники. Их даже публиковали.
Trotzdem, manchmal kommen wir drauf. Das heißt, von den alten Leuten, von den jungen Leuten, die von ihren Eltern oder Großeltern etwas bekommen haben, da entdecken sie plötzlich ein Tagebuch oder einen Brief und so etwa. Da bringen sie diese zu uns und wir nehmen die auf.
Но всякий раз это удача историка, это находка и приобретение потом нашего архива.
Aber jedes Mal ist es eigentlich eine Rarität. Das ist noch zu keinem System geworden. Wir freuen uns natürlich, aber das ist eine pure, ein pures Glück eines Historikers.
Okay. So, you had a second question. I want to be clear about timing, because apparently that's my job. So if we can keep it as short as possible.
Yeah.
And do you have translation through the...
headphones now?
Headphones now? Okay, great.
Yeah. So my second question is, if I wanted to go to a library in Russia and get a contemporary LGBT book, would I be able to do that?
Легко. Absolut einfach. Sie kommen bloß und nehmen die, wenn wir welches haben. Wenn wir dieses Buch, das Sie brauchen, haben.
Приезжайте в Москву и позвоните мне по телефону.
Kommen Sie nach Moskau und rufen Sie da mich an. Und Sie sind herzlich willkommen.
So generous. I appreciate that. So we had one last question, but we're a minute over time. So if we can make the question short, if that's okay with everybody, this will be our last question. Yeah, up to the front.
Okay, very quickly, I would like to thank those courageous women. I'm sorry. Yeah. And both of you. And Valentina, to you also, Valentina. Yeah. And my question to Valentina is, do you have any actions in a public space in Romania, like this kind of actions? And a very quick second question to Lina. Or no, are you agree with, it's okay with that?
Yeah.
Do you have, because of political situations, are you thinking about any plan B to take this archive away from Russia, just in case if something happens?
So let's have Valentina answer, and then Elena.
I will be very short. Yes, I do. I have been producing queer culture in Romania since 2008, and I continuing my practice, which means curating contemporary art shows and producing contemporary art shows. And recently, I started working with Jubilee Pen Contemporary Theater Company, Roma Feminist Theater Company, and I started producing also feminist theater. And I do have in plan to make a larger project in 2021 with this research, temporary museum hosted by three major national institutions in Romania. And I hope with the support of Norwegian LGBT Archive. Thank you for this support. And I think that's it.
Great, thank you. And our this will be the last answer of this panel. Thank you for your patience in this.
Мне предлагали несколько раз вывести архив целиком за границу.
Mir wurde einige Male angeboten, das Archiv im Ganzen ins Ausland zu bringen.
Для того, чтобы архив сохранить, мы его оцифровываем. Но сам архив, вся коллекция, все, что нам удалось сделать за эти 20 с лишним лет, все это принадлежит гей-лесби-сообществу России.
Also wir arbeiten jetzt an der Digitalisierung des ganzen Bestandes. Aber die authentischen Materialien, die wir so lange mit so einer großen Mühe gesammelt, kollektioniert und bearbeitet haben, das ist das Eigentum und das historische Gut der russischen Queer-Community. Und wir glauben, es muss auch dir gehören und da bleiben.
Wonderful. And with that, I want to thank all of these fantastic panelists for their ongoing work and their effort. I, of course, want to thank you all for coming. Thank you so much for being patient as we ran a couple minutes over time. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.